This is CliffCentral.com.
Heidi Patmore is a marketing consultant based in Johannesburg. She's an investor, entrepreneur, all-out drone aficionado, among other things, specializes in traditional marketing, digital marketing, and social media marketing. And I'm very excited to speak to her because I think she shares a lot of the passions that I do about what technology can do for business, what it's already doing for innovation, and in which industries it's going to make the most difference. I actually heard that Heidi's involved in a much more, let's say, controversial or exciting element of what technology could do when she talks tonight at the Heavy Chef event in Johannesburg. These, by the way, are terrific events. I've been to more than one of them, and they host them in Joburg and Cape Town. It's a really interesting place where thought leaders can get together and share ideas. And Heidi's talking about how the sex industry is influencing innovation. Mm-hmm. I said to Sia earlier that the two businesses that started making money on the internet before any other businesses were gambling and porn. And they still lead in many respects. Those industries lead the innovation curve. So Heidi, it's a pleasure to meet you. I can't believe that we've had to wait so long to get you in here, because I know that you're interested in a lot of the things I am, and that our audience are interested in, frankly, when it comes to innovation, when it comes to the opportunities that technology delivers, artificial intelligence, virtual reality, drones, all the exciting stuff, robotics,
crypto,
nanotechnology. I mean, these are the things that I suppose get people excited about what the future of the economy will look like.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Gareth, for having me on the show. It's
sure.
An honor to be here.
No, it's nice to have you.
I was listening to your show on the way here, and I was a little bit nervous doing this talk on the radio, in inverted commas, today, because I thought, oh my God, like, I've got to use so many, like, rude words, and the content is not suitable for work. And what are they going to say? And then I heard the word cunt about 15 minutes ago, and I was like, I'm going to be fine.
Yeah, you were listening to the right thing.
I can say dildo on the radio.
You can relax. It is true, though, that because of the nature of your talk tonight, I reckon you probably had to do some research into how the internet initially had been a place where people really didn't have a commercial eye to what it might become. And the first two things to develop that commercial property for the internet, commercial value, a commercial use for the internet, were gambling and porn, because that's what people do. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing that you could take online. It basically changed and pulled the carpet out from under publications like Playboy and Penthouse and those kinds of things, which were massive businesses once. Changed the whole world, not to mention all the video agencies and the production companies.
I think you're absolutely right, Gareth. I think sometimes, you see it over and over in technology where things that are pushed underground or things that are sort of not out in the open or perhaps a little frowned on tend to find ways to get to still thrive. And that's what we've seen with those industries.
Well, the best example of that's probably when they banned alcohol during the
prohibition
in the 1920s in America, and it became an underground industry that the mob ended up controlling, but it was thriving. Mm. There was more money in it then than there was when they legalized it again.
Absolutely. I mean, these are industries that are not going to go away, and things like no one's going to stop gambling because the government decides no. And you see this over and over again. Like, with my research, I'm focused on seeing how technology is going to change consumer behavior. My background is marketing, so I'm a specialist in consumer behavior. And what really interests me is when new tech comes out that is going to fundamentally shift how you and I behave. So absolutely, you've seen it in gambling and you've seen it in porn. I think the next thing that we're going to see that the tech that drives those two industries is going to be the inclusion of cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. We've already seen companies like SpankChain doing an ICO so that porn stars can get paid in Bitcoin. SpankChain, yeah.
Wonderful.
If you think that one's red bad, you must have heard of CryptoKitties. So there's also now you can get crypto titties, which are modeled on which are modeled on porn stars' boobs. So it's tokens connected to porn stars' boobs. So you do see this over and over, and you know, I don't have a personal opinion on what whether that's a good thing or what anyone decides to do in their own time. If you want to gamble or do whatever you like, I don't really have
leave the moralizing to the politicians.
That's not really the angle that I want to have a look at. But for me, the interesting thing is that when there's an easier way to do something because tech has come along that just makes it so seamless and easy and logical, it thrives. It like mushrooms. So I think that's super interesting. So I've been doing research for the past 2 years on a topic called sex tech, which is where it's kind of where technology and sex start overlapping. Mm-hmm. And when I first saw the hashtag, I was like, no, what is this? I mean, they're taking the piss now. You know, fintech, I get, you know, all these different things. Like, what is sex tech? And I started doing a little bit of research about it, and it just, I mean, this rabbit hole just goes all the way down. And the more I researched the more interested I got. I was like, I've got to do a talk about this. Like, this is so interesting. This is going to fundamentally change consumer behavior.
Yeah, but do you get people who immediately consider that what you're researching here and what is essentially a fascinating, vanguard, innovative industry, because of the nature of its content, do they immediately jump to conclusions about your own predilections? Because a lot of people would be worried about that. A lot of people would immediately go, well, she's researching it, so they must, that must tell
be
us something.
Super kinky.
They must tell us something about her, which is so annoying. It's really not. VR, for example. Let's just look at virtual reality. So there are, from a gaming point of view, perfectly okay for you to be interested in VR when you're creating universes that people can inhabit with a VR headset where you have all the senses being captivated by the fact that you're living in this game, you're immersed in this incredible experience. The minute you start talking about it from a porn point of view, it becomes really freaky and really weird.
Yeah, like, is that okay?
Yeah.
Is it okay that I put on a VR headset and now I'm banging a porn star? Like, you know, what would my mom think about that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I suppose I'm...
It would keep a lot of freaks at home, which is probably good news for the rest of us.
Hey.
Don't yuck someone else's yum, Gareth.
Don't yuck someone else's yum.
Listen, freaks, I'm not judging, but I think that people are going to explore the darker side of their nature. And I'm, again, not making a judgment call on that. But when it comes to sex, there's so much that is taboo. There's so much in society that is frowned upon that it does drive these things underground. And for a lot of people, this might be the escape that they've been looking for. This might be the kind of new exploratory playground for them that doesn't necessarily need to involve the rest of society, and that might be a good thing too.
So I think you make a good point. I mean, I think one of the interesting things about specifically internet and smartphones is how it's made you know, things that you might want to explore that you might not have done in an open way very accessible. For example, you know, when a friend messaged me a few years ago and she's like, you have got to read this book. And I was like, what book? She's like, 50 Shades of Grey, go get it right now. And I was like, well, okay, what is that? And then I was like, and then I saw what it was and I was like, there is no way I am walking into Exclusive Books and going to pick up that book off the shelf and walk into it. But I had absolutely no problem reading it on my Kindle, you know, because no one can see what you're reading. So, and actually, you know, it's so mainstream now that, you know, like, there shouldn't be shame, you know, and embarrassment attached to that. Like, you know, you're just reading a book, you know, it's just, it's an education. But I think that there's still a lot of, you know, we've got this like hangover, this moral hangover from, you know, previous generations. So the nice thing about the internet is that, you know, like, figure it out on your own, you and your laptop, go and see what you're interested in.
Yeah, and consider even in the public realm that some of the most famous people in the world right now are people who've done sex tapes and people who've been caught naked. And you suddenly think, well, actually, the moral landscape is so liquid that it really doesn't matter where you position yourself. It's only interesting to you.
Yeah, like your story on the married couple, the engaged couple wanting to have a sex tape done on their wedding night, and like, how shocking! No videographer wants to film it. I'm like, why? Like, it's not for anyone else. It's just for them. You know,
pure
like, that's what they want to do.
Sure.
Are they hurting anyone? No. Are they consenting adults? Yes. Like, who cares?
does the porn industry? I mean, the sex industry. Let's call it sex tech, as you said. Do they have money to invest in like VR technology, in machine learning, in big data? Is that where they're interested in developing new products? Is that what's going to create the next big money maker for them? Because usually it's filthy old men from the 70s.
Filthy old white guys.
The 70s who have like a fat stomach. Yeah. And they're the ones who like used to run the porn industry. Is it still them
or is it these tech
billionaires?
But things have – I don't know if it's tech billionaires, but in my research, what was really, really interesting is this huge wave of sex tech entrepreneurs who are predominantly women.
Yeah.
Like, for example, there's a website called Women of Sex Tech. And even the way that I came across and it's for all these women who are in the sex tech industry. They are engineers.
I'm going there right now. Women of sex tech.
So it's just a website. So in fact, the term came up when I was, just on my Twitter feed from someone called Cindy Gallup, who's a quite a well-known TED Talk speaker. Mm-hmm. She was a veteran of the ad industry and actually does campaigns around bringing up the number of women creatives in the ad industry. But her side project is a project called Make Love, Not Porn. And this stems from her experiences as a woman in her 50s.
Yeah.
Never married, no kids. Very out there and opinionated and not shy to tell it like it is. And she does this TED Talk about how she was her preferences to date younger men. Okay. And she said from the time that she was in her 20s to now that she's in her 50s, like she's noticed this huge shift in how men receive their sex education. And basically now in the modern age with internet, it's through porn. Yeah. So, that is how boys are getting their sex education. And so when they go into relationships, they just mimic what they see on porn, not thinking like without any sort of thought to whether this is actually going to work for my partner. And should I even ask her if she likes that, so she did this whole thing and started this whole movement called Make Love, Not Porn, which is basically like you and your partner can film yourself having sex and then you upload it to the internet in the interest of education. And it's to kind of say, let's see what's really going on in the bedroom and not in a porn way. But there's, Harvard-educated engineers who've dropped out of working at top tech companies because they weren't satisfied with the vibrator that they bought. And they were like, one of the women was like, I'm an engineer and I can't figure out how to work this vibrator.
Yeah.
And so, her and her partner started a company making sex toys for women, which are like top of the range design. And, the interesting thing is that all through history, as these dodgy 7-year-old white guys think that a penis substitute is a good idea for something to enhance your love life.
But isn't it interesting?
And women see it differently. They're like, well, that's not really – I don't need like a substitute – penis, like maybe I need something else.
There might be something better.
Yeah, exactly. So, women and sex tech, female pornographers, feminist porn, all these sorts of things are really getting really big.
I've got to say, feminist porn sounds like the most terrifying thing available
to
humanity. So there is something interesting about this in that it also is about women taking control of their part of the sex industry, because for so many years, for all of human history, in fact, women have been the subject of this stuff rather than the ones designing it, the ones determining where it's going to go. I suppose there are things that women want in porn and sex toys and relationships that have been completely underrepresented throughout history because they didn't have a say in how it would be created, and now suddenly that's changing. And I think for a lot of men, that's also quite exciting.
I would hope so. I would hope so, because I hope that the hope is that it makes relationships better, makes sex better, makes technology more awesome.
In some ways can take away some of the exploitation that goes on. Because I think that the world of technology does offer an opportunity for people to engage in ways that don't necessarily need to objectify or hurt someone.
I would hope that that's true. I don't know if sex tech is going to be the thing that changes that, the world of exploitation. One of the stats I read when I was reading up on, it was actually about a a porn literacy class that they've introduced in America for 14 to 16 year olds to teach them that what you see in porn is not
real.
It's
the real world, yeah.
And they actually go on a, on like, you know, like life skills, but it's porn literacy. Yeah. And they were saying that, you know, they ask young boys, like, do you think that this is a good idea? We, like, they watch it and then they're like, do you, well, they don't think they watch it in class, but they discuss things that go on in porn, and they say, do you think girls like that? Do you think that girl? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. And the kinds of comments they come up with were like, I've never seen a porn star who isn't having a good time. Okay. Which is not necessarily true.
They don't know that they're actresses.
They haven't even considered it.
If they're bad actresses, doesn't mean that they're not acting.
Yeah. And then also another statistic is that the statistics of very young girls trying things that they probably would never have even thought about 20 years ago is like commonplace. So like when you're a teenager and you're going into relationships, the automatic is like, you know, like you got to do this thing and this thing and this thing and this thing. And like quite hectic, you know, stuff, sex acts, which you wouldn't think that a 14-year-old would like put on a list of things to do. Mm. And then on top of that, one of the stats was that 33% of porn videos that they surveyed had aggression against women. So like a third of porn that you see out there, it's always the male perpetrator, the submissive female, and very often degradation, humiliation, aggression, and that sort of thing. And you think, Jesus Christ, if my 11-year-old sees that and thinks that that's normal, and you know,
it's poisonous.
It's a concern. But on the other hand, you know, now these new sites are coming out. I've had to think about it myself. I've got an 8-year-old girl and a 5-year-old boy, and the statistics say that when he's 9, he'll be first exposed to porn. And I'm like, crisis! Like, what am I going to do about that? And I'm like, so now what do? I sit with a book and show him body parts to, like, explain sex 101 to a 9-year-old? Or, like, that horrifies me. But at the same time, I don't want that, or even for my daughter, like, I don't want their first experience or exposure to that to be like hardcore porn.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I'm definitely giving my daughter a cell phone at 11. Yeah. There you go. Access to everything on the internet in her hand. So I think, you know, if there can be something else as an alternative to say, look, you know, you're growing up, it's adolescence. Here's a website that you can go and look just to see like normal bodies,
but
people
things. Are there resources like that available? Because for parents, I think that would be such a saving grace if you knew you could send your kids to this thing. They could do it on their own, and if they have questions, they can come to you afterwards. Because it could be
just
so
to see something a bit
weird.
More normal.
Yeah, right. Somewhere where you know that they're safe, that it's not something that's going to affect their development badly, make them take up unhealthy practices, make them do things that they shouldn't do at an age where you shouldn't be thinking about those things. It's hard for parents to know what those lines are.
Well, I mean, that's a great idea. But, you know, if you technically were to show your child nudity and sex acts on TV, you are
you're guilty
committing
of a crime.
You are committing child abuse. You know, so like you can't do that. You can't, you know, like in the middle, you've got to be like, I want to sanction this thing, but it's actually illegal. I mean, I think even teenagers, girls and boys don't realize that if you send a nudie or whatever it is to your boyfriend and you're 15, you've now distributed child pornography. Mm-hmm. Like they haven't even considered that. So, yeah, those are things that I think need to be addressed, because we do need to have an alternative to what's available online. And, you know, you should be able to talk about it. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with watching people have sex on TV, whatever. But
we have it in like 90% of our movies.
Exactly. But you know, the depictions of women are usually like so, you know, it's misogyny and just weird stuff. And that's not normal. So, you know, is there a balance to that? I don't know.
Well, apparently there are women now who are directing porn.
Yeah.
And that are taking a much more active role in deciding how the stories go. And,
exactly.
And
that's
what
feminist porn. So,
okay, well, then
that's what feminist porn is.
I just imagine very strident Hillary Clinton supporters wearing pussy hats.
It's not ball breakers. No, it's not that. So women in the sex industry who were like porn stars 10 years ago, of course, have like outgrown their attractiveness or appeal on screen and are like, no, I'm going to produce a porn movie that is like beautiful soft light lingerie and totally from a woman's perspective, where there's respect and consent and, you know, all these kinds of things. I mean, that's really all it is. It's just
feminist porn. I'm okay with that. That's good.
Yeah, that's what it is.
So tell me now, let's get back to the adults and all the rest of it, because there are innovations going on in sex tech, as you talk about, that I think people might be quite surprised by.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so tell us about these things.
List.
You mentioned the toys. We've talked a little bit about the porn, but there must be other things that are going on.
Yeah, so I think toys and video and that sort of thing. But I think the thing that was the most interesting to me, where I really had to kind of get into the research, was the massive proliferation of a new industry of sex robots.
Oh, yeah?
Okay? So sex robots are coming. Okay, so robots for the purpose of sex that are almost indistinguishable from humans are coming. And it's actually, you like history, so I'll go back into a story that I'll touch on tonight. It's not a theme that, this is a theme that's actually come across in history quite a lot. Around 53 BC, a Roman poet called Ovid wrote a poem called Pygmalion. Mm-hmm. And the story goes is that Pygmalion was a sculptor, and he kept getting rejected by the woman in his village. He just wasn't getting far with him. So he decided, stuff that, I'm not going to deal with the real woman in my village, and I am going to carve the perfect statue of woman in perfection. Right. So off he goes, carves the statue. It's beautiful. He then thinks his work is so amazing and the statue is so beautiful that he starts bringing it gifts, laying flowers at her feet. Then he starts dressing her. Then he starts washing her. Then he starts sleeping with her, and things progress. And he's completely obsessed with this statue, which is completely an inanimate object, lifeless thing. Praise to the god of love, Aphrodite, praise. And then, of course, it's a fictional story, you know, in Roman poetry.
If you're going to say Roman, don't say Aphrodite, say Venus, please.
Oh, sorry, Venus. Aphrodite's Greek, right. Yes, yes.
Same woman, but different, correct, different civilization.
Correct. And so good to be in a room with a history expert. So how the story goes is that Venus,
yes,
grants his wish and brings Galileo to life. And so, I mean, this is a story written in Roman times 2,000 years ago. So the theme of falling in love with an inanimate object is not new, but the conversion of you know, like before, if you went to a bachelor party, you might see a blow up doll. Okay.
Which were terrible, embarrassing.
Terrible, awful
things. Like, they're just embarrassing, stupid-looking things that are goofy and ridiculous. And if you were a man who was ever bust with a sex toy in an actual sex toy situation,
or a blow-up doll,
you would be humiliated beyond belief.
Okay. So the
blow-up sheep would be better.
The next iteration of that is that companies started creating life-size, lifelike silicone versions of a blow-up doll, but like that you could
shag.
The real doll, yeah, right. basically that. And Lumi Doll, there's Orient Industries, there's quite a few companies around the world that are basically making life-size, customizable dolls that you can have sex with.
With this doe-eyed expression on their
beautiful
faces.
And hyper-realistic, hey? Like, the hair feels like real hair. The plastic feels like real skin. Some of them have got self-lubrication. Some of them have got internal heating mechanisms. I mean, they've come quite far. But one company, which is called Realbotics, has taken it a step further, and they've now integrated robotics and artificial intelligence with their super popular Real Doll. And that is now the next iteration of what I think we're going to see is sex robots. So buying a doll, $20,000, to put in your home. And the interesting thing about it is it seems like the people who buy these products aren't buying them purely for sex. They are actually buying them for companionship. It's more like a hobby.
Look, you have
to. It's very open in their house.
You really have to resist the temptation to judge.
Totally.
Because there's that. I mean, I'm immediately
put off.
Yeah, I'm freaked out by someone who wants to make love to some inanimate doll with those ridiculous expressions they do have, no matter how real they feel, no matter how they warm up or self-lubricate or anything else. It's still a doll.
Or talk
it feels
to you.
It's kind of lame.
Yeah.
And psychologically, I have to be careful not to say, well, what are the reasons that they can't form normal human relationships? Because the future might involve, with the development of artificial intelligence, the future might involve very real situations that are almost indistinguishable from actual human interactions. It's not impossible to imagine during our lifetimes that'll happen. And then, what point will there be to someone like me sounding like a bigot because I distinguish between the relationship that a man can have with a woman, or a woman can have with a woman, or a man, and then a doll. What's the difference?
Or a robot. So you make a good point, and it is hard to not judge here. And I watched a documentary about this, and the main person that they followed, a customer of Realbotics, who he has four dolls in his home. He's married, retired, old white guy.
Yeah. It's always them.
It's always them. And so they did this whole documentary on James, who is, you know, got nothing else to do other than put makeup on his sex dolls. He takes them to the library. Oh. He's got like a full-on relationship. And his wife lives in the house with him and is totally okay with it. All right. But I think your point about the social, the people growing apart. So there's a couple of things happening. One is that we're becoming super, super comfortable with technology. So the idea of saying, okay, Google, go and find this thing for me, or hello, Siri, or whatever
it is. You could already argue that most people have a relationship with their phone.
Yeah.
In a very real sense, they don't distinguish, you know, they're having the most intimate conversations they've ever had through a device like that.
Totally.
They are sharing things that were unshareable just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And it's connecting people in ways that without the technology would have been impossible.
Absolutely.
So you're already doing this.
And the other thing is, like, if I'm looking around the table here, we're all sitting here, four of us, and every one of us has got our cell phone within like a hand's distance from us. You feel bereft without your cell phone. Like if you're like, oh my God, what if someone WhatsApps me? You know, I think there is this
primary
thing.
Relationship.
You're super connected to this piece of tech and you love it. I mean, you love your iPhone, right? The combination of this attachment to tech, the comfort with tech, and then the thing about that some tech is actually causing distance in relationships between humans and not actually bringing them closer together. Even though you feel like you're connected and go onto Tinder and I can swipe right and, you know, Uber for shagging, you know.
Yeah.
You feel like that's a connection, but it's not a real intimate connection with a human person. So there's this thing going on in the world which they're dubbing there's a global loneliness epidemic, okay? Huh. And it's all around people not being able to form human connections. You see this very prolific in the Asian cultures. In China, with their history of a one-child policy, there's a massive imbalance between men and women. So there's far too many men and not enough women. Okay, so it's like a real thing. Like if you can't find a partner, what do you do? Hmm. In Japan, they did some research. They're having a population crisis in Japan because people are, the birth rate has just dropped to like below the one.
Inverted pyramid problem.
Exactly. Yeah. And in Japan, they did some research which said that 43% of 18 to 34-year-olds were still virgins and 63% were not in a relationship. This is like your major...
Probably unhealthy.
Yeah, this is your major sector of society that's supposed to be procreating, and they're virgin still at 34, and that's almost half your population.
Nothing creepier than a virgin in their 30s. Nothing. Nothing in the entire universe is as dangerous to humanity as a creepy virgin in their 30s.
But in Japan, they've also got a very different culture. There's a whole philosophy around inanimate objects having a soul and having this relationship with inanimate objects that goes far beyond.
They've got vending machines with used panties in them. Come on.
Oh, God. Go and Google Japanese sex culture, and it's, wow.
You'll
be blown away.
Right, exactly.
There is lots of very interesting things. And I was actually in Tokyo earlier this year, and I went to the red light district, and I went on a tour of that, and I was just like, this is just culturally, it's so fascinating. It's so taboo, and yet so open. They've got... Like the laws around brothels and prostitutes are like so restrictive, and yet they've found a way. Like they found there's love hotels, like really interesting. But the interesting thing is that, you know, in Japan, they become very, very attached to inanimate objects in terms of the fact that they believe that if you spent enough time with your phone, the phone now has a soul. Okay. Hmm. In childhood, when they get a toy or a doll and they love it and it's like a teddy bear that you love and whatever, when you outgrow that, they actually have a serious problem letting go of that toy, to the point that they will not throw the toy away when they've outgrown it. They take it to a shrine, put it on the altar. The priest then blesses it, and you have a whole ceremony around saying goodbye to the doll. Like it's a whole, like wow. They all do. They take the dolls on the same day, and it's a big ceremony and whatever. And it's because they are so attached to that to that thing that gave them comfort and joy for so many years that they just can't let it go. They cannot bring themselves to throw it away.
So if that's your cultural reality,
you've got loneliness, virgins, attachment to things, and you've got a booming sex robot industry.
That's where the leading edge is going to be, right?
Thank you. Yeah. Mm. Absolutely. And I think, so if you think about that, if someone's lonely and they can't get a girlfriend, I don't know if you can judge them for going online and spending $2,000 on a plastic doll that is beautiful and gorgeous and you can shag. Is it any better than masturbation? Is it can you judge that? At the same time, though, on that website, Lumi Dolls, about 50% of the dolls look – I mean, you can customize everything from toenails to fingernails to boobs to nipples to color of the lips. Everything is customizable, genitals, everything. So you can basically create this perfect doll that is, everything that you ever wanted. The problem with that is that 50% of the site has dolls that don't look 18. They look younger than 18.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay? So now where are we going? Are we – if you've got a problem with society where people are obsessed with youth and young – in Japanese culture, schoolgirls, that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'll show you the pictures. It looks like the dolls do not look – some of them don't even look over 12. Now, is it encouraging pedophilia if you give someone a sex robot that looks like they're 12? Or are you saving a real person from
a predator from a man?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, for example, there's so many interesting ethical considerations around it. Sex robots are programmed to be something that you can do anything to. There's no consent. There's anything goes. You can act out any fantasy that you like.
So it might give some psychopath an
outlet?
Well, no, it might also create an expectation in them that that's how the real world works and that consent isn't required, and then we lead ourselves down a very dark path of perhaps a more abusive, more dangerous society. I don't know, because I think people have always had weird, bizarre, probably dangerous fantasies, and there have always been people who've taken it too far, and there have always been people who've broken the rules. But society seems to have a way of dealing with them. And you can't condemn them before the act, right? Otherwise, it's a thought crime.
Yeah,
It's so dangerous.
How do you judge that? For example, there's a lot of discussion in – ethics in robotics is a big thing that's happening. But then taking it one step further to a sex robot, is it rape if you rape a sex robot? Is it rape?
Well, you remember not too long ago in the 1800s, there were slave owners who had the same attitude
to real
about
people.
their actual people. Mm. They were like, this is my possession, so I'm just going to do to her what I want.
Exactly.
So that was obviously morally completely unacceptable, but – how can we now do this with a robot just because it's inanimate?
Hmm. So
what if it is artificially intelligent? What if it's as intelligent? Because that's also not too far away if you read the likes of Kurzweil and Diamandis, that the singularity is going to occur. And ultimately, when we reach that point, the machines might even be much, much smarter than
we
are.
In our lifetime.
Right.
It's going to happen in
our lifetime. So if that happens, shouldn't it deserve at least the same amount of respect as a human being, even if it doesn't have what we call a soul?
Mm-hmm. So,
which, by the way, we can't define.
People with PhDs at Harvard are studying this and researching this. So it's really interesting.
I try to understand what Sam Harris and what he means by consciousness. And we say that we're conscious. We're still debating whether other animals are conscious, sentient, whether machines could be made sentient. How do we know that once given the processing power of the human brain and a purpose, that a machine can't be conscious? And if it is, doesn't it deserve rights? And if it does have rights, how can you be made? How can you be created as a sex doll
with the primary purpose,
the only purpose of giving pleasure to your master?
Mm.
If you're as or more intelligent than your master,
yeah,
I mean that's dangerous territory, right?
Yeah, now you're getting into philosophy, hey?
But this is exciting for people who are interested in the nature of the idea and in the technology.
Well, when you talk about, gambling and online porn driving tech forward, so by far, sex robots are far more advanced than any other robots. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got like Hanson Robotics that's bringing out a robot like Sophia, which is just, it's actually just a head and a torso. And
what's that Boston company that has
Boston
those?
Boston Dynamics.
They make those
four-legged robots that open the
frightening
door.
Frightening creatures.
Freaky. Yeah. But I promise you, if you look at Harmony, which is Realbotix's sex doll, like she's streets ahead of those ones. So you kind of think, well, if we're talking about ethics, you know, Sophia the robot has citizenship of Saudi Arabia. Okay. So she didn't granted citizenship of an actual country. So now
of
does that
all countries, Saudi Arabia?
Saudi Arabia gave her citizenship. So now she has the same rights as a citizen.
Women have no rights in Saudi Arabia, but
Sophia
she
does.
Has. Wow.
Yeah. So Sophia does.
Irony upon irony.
But yeah, but Harmony, who's the sex robot version of a robot as well, like way more advanced, like way more advanced. So I think, and this is the thing. So that desire of Matt McMullen, who is the creator of Real Doll, when you hear him talk about why he's created this, it's not about shagging. It's not about that at all. In fact, he was an artist, and that was where it came from, his initial development of those kinds of dolls. It was just like almost appreciating women's bodies as an art form.
It's like Ovid's Pygmalion.
Exactly. But when you talk to him, he's like, he doesn't really talk about the sex part of it. He talks about connection. He talks about relationship. He talks about seduction. He talks about respect. You know, like those are the things that he talks about. He doesn't talk about just shagging the doll, you know.
And we've only looked at the one side of this because they're going to be male sex dolls too. And women
are
they're going to be women who have the same attitudes to those male sex dolls that a lot of men have to a female sex doll. That this is really here to give you pleasure.
Yeah.
And for a lot of women already, they look at men and they go, I don't really need you. No, let's be serious about this for a second, because women can go to a sperm bank, for example, and raise a kid on their own without any need for a man to be a part of their lives.
Sure.
They can be completely self-sufficient. And I'm saying, you know, this is an...
It's possible. Whether it's the right thing is
a
different discussion.
Sure, but it's a kind of a utopian idea that some ultra-feminists have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's entirely achievable right now. So if you did crave companionship in addition to all of those things, you could have a machine that could give you that.
Mm. Yeah. So the ratio at the moment is about...
Probably be a better lover than a lot of actual men.
Well, so there was a New York Times journalist who actually went to Realbotix and met the male version of Harmony. Very, very interesting in terms of what her observations were. The ratio at the moment is about 90% of the demand is for female sex dolls, but there's a 10% demand for male sex dolls.
Hmm.
And her observation was, like, it's really interesting. She's like, that's the first time I've really seen what 9 inches looks like, you know, because you can literally pick this one or that one or the next one. You know, they're hyper realistic. Like, in fact, she said, because the penises are like they move, the skin moves. It's like almost exactly like
a real
person. And she's like, but it's too much hard work. Like the doll's not robotic yet. Just the head is robotic so it can talk. But literally it's just like a dildo with like a mannequin attached to it. So you still got to do all the work, you know.
But ultimately we will be able to make these things move.
You know, the future of you know, we've seen this in pop culture. So we've seen movies like Her, Blade Runner, mm-hmm. Ex Machina, Westworld, where the theme is always a robot or piece of technology that's there to serve a need for humans. But I don't think it's that far away. Like, I think, you know, when you see the culmination of all these things happening in society, the way the tech is advancing, you know, there's even a term for people who are in sexual relationships with robots, and it's called robosexual or technosexual.
Hmm.
So, you know, lesbian, gay, bi, transgender, whatever.
And
we're going to be adding R,
robosexual,
to that whole long
LGBTQIR.
List.
LGBTQIR.
Who are we to judge if you want to be in a relationship with a robot? You know, like maybe that's your thing. You know, I think, I mean, I don't know if you've heard about the incel movement. It's INCEL.
Yeah, this is a very freaky thing. These are involuntarily celibate men.
Yeah. And that whole movement is like, I have so much sympathy for them because, you know, it's so just to explain in case people don't know what that is. So involuntary celibates are men who want to be in a sexual relationship with a woman but have not been able to find a partner,
essentially. Because they're mostly losers.
Don't be so so mean, Gareth.
I'm sorry, but
we can't all be cool.
If you made an effort to make yourself more attractive to women, and if you
there's
actually
a whole culture they call so you know there's a term called alpha male. So the incels call themselves beta males, which is basically that they're like second best to the alpha male.
So what woman's going to want that? No wonder you're involuntarily celibate.
They call sexually attractive women Stacey's, and they call sexually attractive men Chad's, and they are totally against them. They're like, they are so bitter and angry that they can't get laid, that it's actually making them a bit crazy, to the point that, was it earlier this year or last year, where, you know, the terror attack in Canada, where that guy drove down the street and knocked down 10 people?
He was a self-declared incel.
Self-declared incel, Alec Manassian, and he's a 25-year-old, and he was very clear that he was so outraged by the fact that he was involuntarily celibate that he took it out by mowing down 10 women in the street.
Yeah, but you see, there's something so messed up about that, because he's blaming the women for his unattractiveness. Like, it's,
he's not even
like
that unattractive.
Like the women had this meeting. Well, he must be a horrible human being if he mowed down 10 women. He can't have the personality of a wit.
He's obviously not a great guy.
Right.
So
he imagines that women got together and decided in a committee that they weren't going to have sex with him. Mm. Instead of improving himself and making himself attractive to those women, he's chosen this label and he's decided it's everyone else's fault.
Yeah, there's a big culture of blame.
I'd love the psychologist to just move in here and start.
When you look at
filling in the blanks,
what people say about him, they talk about things like very introverted, very angry, very sarcastic. You know, in terms of like he would post things on Facebook that was really insulting. And you think, like, I have a lot of sympathy, because I'm just like, you know, what happened in this guy's life that he ended up like that? But the concerning thing is this is a movement that is snowballing. It's not a movement that's going away. And so when you're combining all these factors together,
you're
going to
need
a lot of sex robots. I mean, the prediction is that in by 2050, everyone will have had sex with a robot at one point, and that it will be completely okay in society so that no one will judge that. And when they did research with men and women about whether they would sleep with a sex robot, 2/3 of men said yes, and 2/3 of women said no. So I think, but
it's
also this
difference,
is worrying.
Another
is
difference
worrying.
Between us.
Exactly. And this, are we as two genders, are we just growing too far apart? And
we've always been slightly different. We've tried to, you know, to cover up those differences where they don't suit us in our ideas of what equality should be. But I'm curious, because I don't know that it's a good idea that these incels are suddenly catered to by robots and their unhealthy psychological problems are allowed to perpetuate themselves with a robot fulfilling some physical need.
Yeah.
Because ultimately the mental problem stays. Yeah. So there are obviously ways that robots are going to fix things, and there are obviously ways that robots are going to have no effect at all. Just like the internet and computers and cell phones have made humans better at certain things and have done nothing to improve our actual ability to communicate with each other in person.
Yeah, because I think what makes people happy is not necessarily, and I think this is the interesting thing, is that, you know, you think what makes you happy is this ideological version of this beautiful, big busted, perfect skin, blonde, huge lips thing. Okay.
Have you been reading my blog?
But what actually makes you happy is someone who understands you, a feeling of connection, intimacy. You know, those are the things that actually give you satisfaction, not necessarily, you know, the physical image of perfection, you know. Like, so
I think people are ignoring that. Look, I think everybody has their thing, right?
Hopefully you can have it all. But,
yeah, but the world of the future should be a world in which you are able to satisfy your own needs, wants, desires, but where you don't in any way infringe upon the needs, wants, and desires of other people.
Exactly.
I mean, that would be that's real utopia. Mm. And I think there are so many women in the sex business who are exploited, who are predated upon, who have been treated like objects by men and by the industry and by the viewers and by the users of that material for such a long time, that this does represent an opportunity for us to at very least satisfy the needs, wants, and desires of a certain part of society that up to now has not been catered to. Mm-hmm. And perhaps for society as a whole to reevaluate what it is that makes us human. Mm. I mean, robotics really is about that. It's about us looking at ourselves in the mirror and going, how do I know I'm any better than a robot? What is it that sets me? Is it my?
What makes me human?
Is it my biology? Is it my organic matter? Because that's certainly nothing special in the universe. Is it that I can think? Because even a chimpanzee or a dog has been shown to think in advanced ways that we didn't know 50 years ago were possible for some of the higher primates and other animals, pigs even. is it that I have this religious impulse that we need to call a soul or whatever else it is? Because there's no way we can define that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is lost when you die in terms of your mass that we can attribute to being a soul. So what is it that makes us better or makes us unique or makes us special? And if we can create a version of ourselves, like Ovid did in his story, if we can create a version of ourselves that has all of those characteristics, maybe it has, instead of biology, it has electronics, but otherwise it's exactly the same as us, and it has a conscious self in its own mind, what is it to be a human?
Yeah. Very profound. I don't know if I can answer that.
But this is exciting stuff.
Gone very philosophical.
And I do think that for a lot of people, it's more than just sex. Because sex is one of those things that humans, despite all of our evolution and the changes in the way that we treat each other and the way society has educated us and changed us and hopefully improved us, like sex is something that still remains very animal and very basic.
Yeah,
at some level.
It's a basic human need. It's like being hungry.
Right.
nothing you can do can control it. One thing I think that is interesting about that, though, is that – so I've been thinking about – so you've got these massively lonely people, and they decide that they're going to now have a relationship with robots. Where does that leave us as society in 50 years' time? Because those people are not going to procreate. So I was kind of like almost like maybe this is not such a bad thing. Well, you know, like if people are unable to fit into society and – like evolve, I suppose. Like I almost think it's like a Darwinian theory kind of scenario where like those who can't make proper human connections and have intimacy and have a real girlfriend are just going to make themselves extinct if they're substituted with a robot.
I think ultimately humanity is working itself out of a job. Really?
Okay.
We don't have... In 100 years, we don't have a purpose.
Yeah.
Our purpose is to enjoy whatever that is.
Yeah.
Seek happiness. Do whatever we want. It's to live a life of leisure and to live as long as possible. And you have complete control over when it starts and when it ends. But it's not important anymore because the robots will be doing all the important stuff.
Yeah, if they haven't killed us all off by then.
Well, that's the other thing. What if your sex robot turns on you?
Yeah, well, you know, I was looking at just unrelated. There was a, you know, just coming up in robotics, there was a whole thing on slaughter bots. And because, you know, I'm also interested in – I'm so glad that I'm able to shock you still, Gareth.
Go on.
Very gratifying. Yeah. So I was researching drones, actually, and I was just like having a look at what was happening in the drone space. And I came across this term because in the sex robot industry, there's actually an anti-sex robot movement called the Campaign Against Sex Robots, which is exactly that, saying that this is terrible for society and blah, blah, blah. And then I found the Campaign Against Killer Robots. And then I was like, yeah, slaughter bots, which are basically robots programmed to kill based on a certain set of criteria. So there's robots that are being developed, drones, okay, which can literally pick out a specific person from a crowd based on what it's been programmed to do.
Obama commissioned thousands of them.
Exactly. Huh. Yeah. So, but this is not like drones coming from the sky, like way out there. It's like a little buzzing thing that literally comes and lands in your head and sticks a bullet in your brain. And it's a real thing.
See, don't
look
so
Google shocked. killer slaughter bots. They're called slaughter bots. And you know, you kind of think like,
what?
Is that okay? Like, because it means that you can be super selective about who you take out. But who's allowed to make that decision? And what would happen if that, you know, if you look at the advancements in artificial intelligence and the coming of the singularity, what happens when the robot takes matters into their own hands? And now you've like basically equipped, you know, machines to take our humans on their own, you know, scary.
So how is drone technology? Because I know that's another thing that you love and you're interested in.
Yeah.
And I mean, at the most immediate instance, I'm interested in the idea of passenger drones. I know that they've been testing these in the UAE.
Yes.
Any developments there? Are we likely to have these available to us in the next 5 to 10 years?
How much time have you got, Gareth? Maybe I need to come on tomorrow and talk about flying cars.
I love this discussion.
Okay, so there's currently 10 manufacturers in the world who are making flying cars. Mm-hmm. I actually have a talk online. My previous Heavy Chef talk was actually on flying cars, and that was done a year ago, and I just did it again at DroneCon about 2 months ago, just with an updated version. So I'll give you the quick summary of what I think is happening with flying cars. 10 companies are currently in production with flying cars. I think that the company that has the most chance of success with flying cars is a company called Lilium Jet, based in Munich in Germany. They just received funding from Tencent in China, mm-hmm. To the tune of like $100 million or something. They've just hired a designer who used to work for like Lamborghini or Maserati or one of those guys. And the culmination of, we've got this working passenger drone, we've got investment from Tencent. Tencent is Chinese, based in Shenzhen, where all the tech in the world is made. China's got 6 of the world's 10 megacities, which are populations of more than 10 million. There is no more space to build roads. The only way to go is up. Flying cars are coming. I reckon within 10 years, there will be flying cars. Oh, and you know who's driving it? But one of the companies that is most interested in this technology is Uber. And they've got something called the Uber Elevate program, which is an entire strategy to transform cities into being able to take passengers from one place to another, like an Uber, but in a flying car, in a drone that basically can either be autonomous or can have a – like at the moment, the regulation is the thing that's holding it back. You have to have a pilot in the vehicle. But ultimately, you are going to be able to go onto your iPad and call an Uber Air vehicle, mm-hmm. go up to the top of the building. That will be called a vertiport when you go on the top of the building, and you go and get into the drone, and it takes you to Santa, and you're there in 3 minutes.
Just clip me on. I'll put on a helmet.
Absolutely going to come. You know? Absolutely, that'll be a reality within 10 years. Dubai makes a lot of claims. So the three cities where I think it's most likely to happen are Dallas, Dubai, or Singapore, because their regulators are driving it. So they're like, we're definitely going to have it. They made a claim about a year and a half ago that they were going to have flying taxis in Dubai, and that deadline came and went. Yeah. And in fact, the drone that they profiled, like we've yet to see a production model of that. You know, I've yet to see the Ehang 184 with an actual person in it in the air. You know, but the video has been doing the rounds on the internet for a while. So, yeah, I think flying cars are definitely going to happen. I don't know about in emerging markets like Africa, because we still, you know, our infrastructure is not as developed as places like China. We don't have, you know, the need drives the innovation. You know, if you can get around in a car, great. If you can't, because there's, you know, in China a few years ago, there was a traffic jam that lasted 9 days.
Oh.
Okay. Like people were stuck in the traffic for 9 days. So they have a real crisis. Like they have to have something else. They either have to have a Hyperloop underground or they have to have flying cars. It's just.
So the necessity will breed the innovation.
And with the kind of country that they are with, you know, like the government is quite dictatorial.
It's authoritarian.
So they can decide. Like they, you know, in a democratic society, you might have like people who are like, demonstrating against, we don't want flying cars.
In China, they just decide.
When the government's like, this is what we're doing, it happens. So,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I'm curious also about the other end of the size scale. So we go down to these micro drones.
Correct, nano drones.
That can swarm.
Yeah.
And they can create an artificial universe in front of your very eyes that would look like reality to you.
Yeah.
If I'm standing in dry Gauteng in the middle of August, they can make it look like it's summer in Scandinavia.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't know the difference because it looks real in front of you. It can create all the conditions.
Mm-hmm.
How far are they in developing these swarming drones and their ability to not just create visual ideas that might confuse us between the reality and the made-up universe of drones, but also the functions of these nano drones?
Well, I think nanotechnology just as a industry is super, super interesting. I just think the world's going to change in ways that we haven't even considered yet. I don't know. Swarm drone technology is very common now, and we see it mostly in aerial displays, like what Absa did when they did that drone thing in the sky for their new launch and that sort of thing. So it's kind of more of
World
a
Cup
entertainment
opening
gimmicky, yeah. You know, like let's do this cool thing, make it look like fireworks, but it's actually drones with lights on it. yeah, I mean, like, so when you talk about things like that, I'm just like, what's the point? Like, why, like, can we not just please solve hunger and poverty? Like, why are we putting money into that?
Aren't these drones also helping with medicine?
Yeah,
I mean, health is an area of massive interest at the moment.
Definitely. So for example, in Rwanda, when you've got Zipline delivering blood samples, blood for blood transfusions across miles, I think the potential is always there. There's still a lot of limitations in drones at the moment. So regulation is a big thing because you can't fly beyond line of sight in most markets. Zipline's got it right because their president was involved in giving them the go-ahead to do it. But there's still a lot of, you know, like what they're doing is amazing, and they've got a lot of funding and they've got a great story. Like, we can get, you know, Rwanda's very hilly, so to get blood to a clinic would normally take the whole day, and now they can send it in a drone in 45 minutes. But the problem is that the payload is only like a kilo. Mm. And when you have a blood transfusion, you need like 15 kilos of blood. So like, you need a lot. So it's,
also, you need
I'm
someone,
glad they're doing it.
You need someone on the other end who can do the transfusion.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not all. It's not normally the problem. But yeah, so the idea is good, like sending medication across, you know, via drone, because that's a good use case. But it's not, a lot of the things in the drone industry are not completely practical yet. So,
sure.
So it's let's try it. And I mean, that's how innovation starts. You know, the Wright brothers, like, we run a bicycle shop, and now we're going to try and make a plane, and we've failed 20 times, but then suddenly we have a plane, and now we've created a whole new industry. So it'll evolve slowly as technology gets better, as energy becomes more efficient and that sort of thing. And, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of I'd love to see where the innovation goes. I can't really predict, but I think that, yeah, drones, well, artificial intelligence, Internet of Things, all of these things are going to converge.
And sex, like, you, that's what you're talking about tonight. So that's where it'll start, probably.
Yeah.
I hope these slaughter bots don't die. I don't want to die by slaughter bot. That's kind of ignominious, really. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Pleasure
for
to meet
me.
You. Pleasure to spend some time with you. Heidi Patmore is an investor, entrepreneur, drone aficionado. She's now an expert on sex tech as well. So you can catch her at the Heavy Chef events in Johannesburg on the 21st of August, 28th of August in Cape Town. And please keep doing this interesting work. Keep researching these things, even if people do give you the raised eyebrow. Because, I mean, I do think in the future they're going to be asking for your advice. Even right now, if they're busy judging you for Googling,
okay. They can judge you with their judgy eyes. I don't mind.
All right, there we go.
This is CliffCentral.com.